Hey there, wonderful listeners. It's your host, Ziva Belel, and I'm thrilled to have you back for another episode of On Becoming. Today, I've got a very special guest with me, someone who's weathered the storm of change right alongside me. Back in 2016, myself and 200 of my colleagues, including my guest today, found out on a conference call that we were all getting laid off from our beloved jobs at Yelp. Now, I was an invested employee, don't get me wrong, but my guest today, Cyrielle Thomas, who was the community manager in Bordeaux, who I hired and managed, put me to shame. She was always going above and beyond, creating new festivals, mentoring colleagues, and paving inroads with politicians to spread the word. Local, community, quality, that was what she ate and breathed daily. So when we all lost our jobs, I have to be honest, I was a little worried about her. Not that I didn't think that she would find a job, but that she would never be able to find a project that lit her up as naturally as her community manager role did. Let me tell you, I never should have worried. Born in France, but raised most of her childhood in Cameroon, Cyrielle Thomas is now the founder and CEO of Dogucha and Digital Menu, and oversees a team of 10 employees from her new home in Fukuoka, Japan. How did she wind up there? After she got laid off, she spent some time traveling and went to Japan, where she fell in love with the rich heritage and culture of tea, but also realized how hard it was for her to find the best tea dresses as a foreigner. And that's when the local loving entrepreneurial light went on. Why not develop tea tourism in Japan like wine tourism in France? Without giving too much away, you've got to listen to Cyrielle's fascinating story. From her childhood in Africa watching Japanese manga cartoons, to her entrepreneur years at Yelp, Airbnb, and Uber, to what finally led her to build her life in Japan as the country's first foreign female tea tourism entrepreneur. Grab something warm and have a great listen. I can't wait to hear what comes up for you. Enjoy. Welcome on to On Becoming, Cyrielle.
Thank you, Ziva. Happy to be here.
One of the things that I enjoy doing, or the premise of this podcast, is really, you know, pulling back the veil on how we become who we are, because frequently we're just very focused on our future and are sometimes overwhelmed with all the to-do lists and the things we want to achieve. We don't really take a step back and think about how we got to where we are. And I think it's a wonderful gift to be able to share stories of how we become who we are, especially to inspire other people who might resonate with some of the values and the ambitions that you have. So before we begin, is there anything about your story that you are really curious about looking into with more intention today?
I don't have a special moment that I want to go deeper in, but it's true that I was wondering, where should I start? You know, where do I start speaking about my story? Because of course, as you say, there's Africa, and Africa is a huge part of my life. It has made the person I am today, the personality I have, but I am also French. So it is also a huge part of the reason that led me to Japan. Also, like being in France at that precise moment when I wanted to start a company. So up to you. Let me know what you want me to share, and I can go through all the part of my stories.
Okay. So yeah, where to begin with a multicultural identity? You know, I think that that's, you know, woven into your story is exposure to and absorption of different cultures. So I think that that's a great little place to start our journey. Maybe you could just tell us also where you are today, what time it is in the day, and what are you planning on doing tomorrow?
So today I'm in my apartment in Fukuoka City. So it is a city located in Kyushu Island. So it's another island from where Tokyo, Osaka, and the most famous, you know, city are, so which is Honshu Island. So it's still a remote island in the south of Japan. So it is in Japan, and it is almost 6 p.m. And what I will do tomorrow is a day off tomorrow. So I'm planning on enjoying my day off.
What do you enjoy doing on your days off?
I'm trying to fall in love with Japan again and again, because it's also part of the adventure. Is you work in a country, but you need also to take the time to still enjoy it as an individual and not focus only on work.
So you're still in the discovery phase of your new home.
Yes, yes. Even in the same city, you know, it's like a staycation sometimes. You have a day off here and you're like, okay, where to explore? There are so many things to explore. Even if it is by bike or is it by car? So it's always new everywhere. And right now, to be honest with you, it's a beautiful period of the year. It's what we call Momiji, Koyo, and it's when all the trees become red, yellow, orange with all the autumn colors. So it's a thing like the hanami during spring where you can see the beautiful sakura blooming. So it's something just to stop and take the time to admire, not always rushing. That is part of the Japanese culture too that I appreciate.
Do you feel now where you are that there was a clue in your past that you would wind up one day living in Japan?
No. Honestly, no. I was always attracted by Japan. Most of the reason is because when I lived in Africa, there was a time when I was a kid where we got only two TV channels. One was a local TV channel, like CRTV, and the other one was Manga TV. So and I'm also the Club Dorothée generation. So when I went back to France, you know, for holidays, I was always in front of some anime and manga. But I was also attracted by everything around tradition. So not only what we can see on manga or anime, but also everything about their religions, Buddhism, Shintoism, and also the architecture. So there were the food also. So there was always something in me that was like, okay, I love Japan. But I never, never imagined myself being here, working here, living here.
I remember meeting you in 2012 when I was scouting Bordeaux with Yelp. I had, at that point, already worked with hundreds of scouts in different cities. And here we are in Bordeaux. And there was maybe a group of 20, 25 people in this conference room. And you just had these bright, curious eyes where you, out of everyone in the room, were, you know, the most engaged, the most curious, the most just dynamic. I wasn't surprised later on that you were the best scout of Bordeaux and that you were the clear number one choice to become the community manager. There was already something very evident to me in that moment that you had something different and you had something special. How was that enthusiasm circulating inside of you that it was kind of just coming and bursting forth in a way that was so palpable for me?
I think I was always a passionate person. Like I always do things by passion and I get bored super easily. So it all started even when I was a kid and my mom said that I was very passionate about everything that I did. But once I'm not interested anymore, like, boom, I can't work on it or I can't do it. And maybe it comes also from my life in Africa, you know, like the mentality, the personality there of all the, you know, African people is full of joy, no matter what they are going through, actually, like happiness, sadness, they are always smiling. There's always a positive listens. And so it brings me, we were always dancing and we were always smiling. There's also the innocence of being a kid also and teenager in Africa. I don't say it has to be the same, you know, when you are adults or expats and living in the foreign countries, but being a kid and teenager there. So it brings me that passion and happiness and smiling philosophy. Then I went to France and France actually was the first expatriation for me. I was an expat in my own country because I never knew France aside from going for, you know, 2 weeks, 1 month holidays. So I went through a lot of work opportunities during my university time and business school times, work opportunities with very French traditional companies. And I could feel that it was not a fit for me. Like I had some difficulty to find my place there. I remember I saw this job offer for the scout period at Yale. And I read all the job description and I was like, it's so much like me, like discovering new places, like being able to connect to a community. And I also read that small line that there could be an opportunity to become the first community manager in Bordeaux. I said to myself,
clever girl.
I said that this is it. This is my dream job. I really want to do it. Like, I could definitely envision myself. And I think there's something with envisioning, you know? If you envision yourself,
yeah.
If you, there's a word for that in English. It's manifesting, or, you know, like being able to see yourself in a specific place or in a specific becoming moment. At that time, I wanted to become mm-hmm. the community manager of Yelp. And by that, I knew that I needed to go deep in the experience by becoming a scout and trying the platform from scratch all by myself. So I was definitely very motivated by that. And after that, when I get into the job and I had to meet you and the team, like, it was making sense for me.
I love this, because I didn't know the backstory that you had a plan, you had a plot, you had a strategy. But I'm fascinated by what it's like for someone to feel that something is so aligned that they know that there's an intuition that's a really strong force that kind of compels you forward and allows you to make very, very natural decisions about how you need to show up mm-hmm. and what you need to do to move mm-hmm. towards something. And so you really put it in motion in a very natural way. And there was like just so much charisma and clear passion that it was, you know, you made it a very, very easy job for me to select you. There was no debate. That was not the case in all the cities I had to hire in. It was a no-brainer. So you mentioned Cameroon and that France was your first kind of expatriatism. How was your family in Cameroon to begin with? And how did you move back to France? And what was that experience like for you growing up as a French family in Cameroon and then leaving?
Actually, my parents started traveling very young for their generation. Like, they were in their 20s when they decided to start traveling, and they went to different parts of the world, actually. They got that opportunity when I was 2 years old to go to Cameroon. And actually, my dad came there. It was to close a company. But when he arrived, he quickly saw the potential there and decided to put all his effort to see there's something to do as kind of a revival. And he succeeded, actually. He succeeded and he could grow the company. So he was also kind of an entrepreneur. So he led by example, like what it is to work hard and to envision where you want to go and how you want to grow your company and how you want to have your family. So he has been a model, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she took really great care of us. And I think she taught me to be like a perseverant kid. Like, even when it was time to do my homework and when I didn't know an answer, I came and I say, "Mama, mama, please help me. I don't know. Can you do it for me?" And she said, "No, I won't do that for you. You will do it by yourself." And I was so afraid to go to school, you know, and to say, "Okay, I don't have the answer. So I don't have the answer. I have nothing on my homework." And it teach me to be perseverant and to try to find the answer by myself and to work hard also, even by being a kid or a teenager. And it helps me right now, being an entrepreneur, having been taught these kind of values by my parents. So to answer your question, growing up in Cameroon, being a kid and being a teenager was great, actually. Always sunny all the year, and being like feeling rooted to the country. And I was there from 2 years old, so I had friends there from kindergarten. So we follow each other until we get graduation. It was super, super hard, actually, to go back to France at that time. Even if I was very impatient, you know, like old teenager, 18-year-old, bored of their parents. And they're like, "I want my freedom. I want my apartment. I want to be all by myself." And then all in a sudden, you are all by yourself. You are 6,000 kilometers away from your parent in your teeny, teeny apartment in Paris. So I started actually by medical studies, because I did the baccalaureate S, like the scientific, and there were science. And there were mm-hmm. not so many choices at that time. So when I started this, it was at René Descartes, this medical school. I knew it was not for me, actually. I knew it was definitely not for me.
You knew right away.
I think I did few months. I did the exams and everything, and just to say I did it. But then I had at that time, again, it was only 18 years old, you know, you don't know what you would become or where you would go. So it was hard that first year in France and the weather and everything, and to learn a new culture, even if it was my culture. I grew up in Africa with parents who really wanted us to fit to the country, to understand the cultures, you know, to be with every nationalities. So that was so rich in terms of experience being a kid.
So you have this experience being a kid where your parents are instilling values of perseverance and openness and interaction with the local culture, the local customs. You come to France and right away you
I
feel
didn't belong.
Out of place. Yeah. You're like, who are these people? Why are they so grumpy?
That's so true. You know, in Cameroon, we always go to shops or we see everyone and we say, bonjour, bonjour. Hey, how are you? So everyone is a family, even if you don't know that person. It's true that when I came back to France for the first time, and when I live in Paris, and I continue to be like that, you know, like this African personality, and I got my own language because we have some kind of way of speaking super fast there. And also we have some expressions. So I kept this and people, I think, didn't get it first. Even when I was saying bonjour, bonjour with a big smile at the shop, like I got the grumpy person and they're like, why are you smiling? Like, why are you saying bonjour? And everyone, like, what is this country? So again, it's a question of perseverance.
Yeah. No, it's true. You have this, like, you have this radiance, you have this sunshine, you have this glow. And I know about the flow when you're speaking in French, it goes very, very fast. Cyril. So I remember you mentioned it earlier. You eventually make your way to Yelp. Through that connection, knowing this visualization, this manifestation of this experience you want to have, I guess, in contrast to some of the other experiences that you had that were not really checking all the boxes for you. But you do get to a place where, much to everyone's surprise, because the thing started out really, really well, you feel frustrated because the effort that you're putting into the work isn't being reflected back in the community growth. And I remember there was something like you were losing in a way that special spark that you have, you know, that radiance that you have. And there was something almost covering you or preventing you from tapping into that. And I remember we did some kind of special
one-on-one with Ziva. Yes,
to try to understand what was going on and what was holding you back. What was preventing you from tapping into your intuition, your power? What do you remember about that? What was happening for you, and what do you think was released that allowed things to start taking off again?
I think I was just afraid to fail, as many of us actually, like the failure or doing mistakes. So sometimes you just prefer not to try anything, and then that's okay. You stay in your comfort zone, you know. But then when I got this one-on-one, actually, it kind of allowed myself, like, oh, okay, so I can make mistakes. I won't lose my job, you know. And then I started a lot of new things. Mm-hmm. And then I started really having fun and being really myself. And that's something that I am keeping also here in Japan. It's a new country. And I'm doing also all this company building and entrepreneurship. But it's staying true to yourself and learning how to be comfortable in the uncomfort. Like learning how to stay comfortable even when it's out of your comfort zone and trying new things. So this is where what I remember from this period is maybe still like this young worker who didn't want to do any mistakes, who didn't want to lose the job, who was just afraid, you know, to put a lot more of my own personality and authenticity because also of the past experiences at work where you need to tick some boxes and there are at that time. It's not the same period we are living now that back more than 10 years ago, actually. So I was not a fit for people trying to put me in specific boxes that were not mine, actually. I refuse myself to be in a box. And it's funny that I'm saying this knowing the Japanese culture, which is really strict, there are a lot of rules, but still, I still allow myself to be myself, to keep this authenticity. And this is what I started to do after this precise one-on-one, and I kept doing even with the other work experiences that I got right after Yale. It's staying true to myself.
What do you think you needed to hear from me at the time to allow you to do that?
It was okay to make mistake, because there's a lot about mistake culture. I don't know if it's only with the French education, but it gave an impression at that time. So when I say that the education system in France, and when I say in France, it's because even in Cameroon, I was in a French high school, so we follow the French program. But it's still, it was hard to fail or to do mistakes, and there one were kind of punishing you for if it's not the good answers or anything. So I always put a lot of pressure on myself to always do the things the right way and to follow the rules. So to answer your question, I think having this one-on-one with you, and I think it is more also the American mindset, is just try and you will see, make mistake, learn from it. And it has been my mojo since then, actually.
I love that. I'm so happy.
Do you remember the book you offered me, actually?
No. What did I?
How to be bossy in a bossy pants without even knowing how I would become a boss. Still on my bookshelf, actually.
Oh my God. That's amazing. It is.
Yeah, manifesting, envisioning,
we'll
even before
the
right person here, me, was envisioning Japan and being a boss.
Wow. Well, the seeds were already there. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, I remember just being really surprised that there was this shift in you. And I don't know, I feel like I must have spoken to, I don't know who was managing me at the time. Maybe it was Miriam or it was Jeff. I don't know. And just being like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Celia. Like, something's not on. And they were like, well, what do you think you're going to do? And I was like, I'm going to do special time.
Yes. And you did that on...
Get to the bottom of this.
The good thing is that you did that right away after I start. So it was on the first year. So I could also try a lot of new initiatives, and I also could develop myself as an individual and as a professional. So definitely good.
Yeah. Well, there was definitely like a before and after. And I think that then you became very ambitious in your experimentation, trying lots of new things and like going in the areas that you were interested in the businesses that you were interested in. It was kind of like, instead of doing what you thought you needed to do, I think that that's kind of what happens often when you're operating from a place of just fear, is you are, and I say you, but it's not just you. It's what, you know, like we all do this. We do what we think is the right thing based on this kind of amalgam of examples that are around us. But what winds up happening is just where we're just, everything is just kind of neutral. There's no real, you know, parti pris. There's no real identity. You're just kind of blending in with everyone else. And when you allow yourself to be truly who you are, then things get very exciting, because even if it doesn't work out, there's something happen. You show up in a way because you have a strong idea, you have a strong conviction, and people can feel it. So I feel like after there was like a whole new Syria that was showing up, like leveled up, and you just continued to set the bar really, really high in your community. And you started tackling areas that no one had seen yet. Like you started aligning with politicians, creating extremely professional videos, always showing up slightly overprepared for every...
That was actually the case.
Always it was like, well, Syria, she's going to like blow it out of the house no matter what. Like it was as if you were just like, poof, 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 you know, like your muscles just like quadrupled.
You know, funny, My mom and dad, they found out some video when I was a kid, and most of the video you can see me in the screen, and I'm like the kind of kid like avec qui voulez-vous lutter, like it's like boom boom boom, as you said, like I'm coming into the screen and I am motivated, decided, and you cannot doubt like where I know where I am going. So it was funny to see this video of me. I was maybe 3 years old,
Yeah.
4 years old, and I was acting like that. That was funny. I saw it this summer.
So when you're on, you're on.
Definitely.
You're like, get out of the way. This is the question is like, where does that willpower and that confidence to go one step further than everyone else? Where do you think that comes from? You know, earlier you talked about manifestation of what you want, but then, you know, sometimes if you're operating from a place of fear, that could diminish that the ability to envision. Or maybe there was a fear that that vision wasn't able to be realized, which was keeping you small. But then when you are sure of what you want and you have the, you know, you have the idea, where do you get the willpower and the confidence to go one step further than everyone else?
Because I don't want any regret, actually. Like, there are so many things sometimes say, oh, I wish I could have done that, or I wish. And then I'm just thinking, like, let's do it. Just let's do it. I wouldn't be here speaking to you from Japan if I was not in this mindset, actually, because it was very scary to take that decision. Like, in 2017, when I traveled, I was still like in my comfort zone. Even if I was traveling to Japan, I discovered an opportunity for business around Japanese tea. So this is also what led me to Japan. And but I was still a traveler, and I knew I was coming back to France, and I had my network, and I already, you know, had a job opportunity after my travel. So everything was already set up for me, like to stay an employee. But then I was thinking that, oh, maybe there's something to do in Japan. And this is also where like it's starting to diverge with the vision that I had to continue on the community building, business development, and staying in France. And when I started to think like, well, maybe there's something to do, and I can be this person who can do that, because I was living the problematic by being a traveler there, and I could afford a solution. I was like, why not just do it? And then you have, you know, the other words that say, oh no, that's too scary. You have a comfortable salary, you have your house in France, and you have, you know, it has been at that time 10 years in France. So it's hard also when you come to a new country. For me, France was a new country, definitely. And you have to learn so many things. Like, you have to adapt, you have also to understand the culture again, you have to see where you can fit in. And then when you finally feel that you belong somewhere and that you have all your loved ones, and then suddenly the student life say, why not Japan? And you're like, no, I'm not ready. And then you say, oh. So it's a lot of internal conversation. So what I decided to do at that time, because I was not ready, like, you know, you say that how can you go, you know, higher and higher each time. At that time I was not ready. I just wanted to follow that comfortable path. So I decided to come back to Japan because I wanted to be sure that I would not have any regret, you know. So I decided to come back and to talk to as many businesses and tea producers at that time, because I discovered a new passion again. So, you know, we already talked about that. I'm someone passionate, and when I have a passion, I am 100% in. So this passion was Japanese tea at that time. And I discovered a whole world of Japanese tea, but so hard to discover for foreigners traveling in Japan. So it was frustrating for me. I could feel the frustration. Like, I was like, where should I go? Oh, I don't understand Japanese. So, oh, what is this tea? Oh, and I want to speak to the, you know, to go to the tea farms and to discover more and more. And I couldn't get the information, and I could envision that, oh, maybe I could do something that gather, but I was not ready. So I came back to Japan in 2018. I also went to more remote areas, because most of the time when you travel for the first time in Japan, you go golden routes. So meaning that you want to go in Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, and rarely you want to go elsewhere because it's not accessible and not visible, meaning that it's so hard to find the right train to go there. And once there, you don't understand everything everywhere. So I decided to go there. It is what we call Inaka. Inaka region is countryside region. And then again, I talk to people a lot, and you know I love to talk. So that was not hard. So I learned some Japanese back in Bordeaux because I knew I wanted to come back to Japan to be able to discuss. And I also met some really great people when I was traveling and some from Yelp team. So I stayed maybe 3 weeks in Japan, but I could feel from the producers and businesses that yes, we would like to have something like that, but it's hard for us to develop and it's hard for us. We would like to welcome foreigners. We don't know how to do. So when I hear, oh, I don't know how to do, I'm asking myself that, do I know how to do? And is there a way I can help? And the answer was definitely yes. So again, I came back to France, but still I think my mind was more in Japan. But I wanted to build my company in France first. I wanted to do everything from France and doing travels to Japan. So I started to do a prototype. And this is also what led me to Japan. It's what happened in France when I decided to go 100% entrepreneur.
Okay. All right. Well, we're coming up. Okay. We're getting there. So what I'm hearing is that like you're this confidence and this willpower to go all the way around a passion or an opportunity that is kind of exposing itself to you. And so you went to Japan, you discovered a passion for Japanese tea, and there was a frustration around the fact that you couldn't get where you wanted to go, find the people, talk to them, consume what you wanted to consume because it was just not designed for someone like you. And then you have this idea, wait a second, I can build something, create something that would solve the problem I'm having.
Yes.
But you're not ready to make a full tilt move to settle in Japan. So you tried to build it in France, or you build it in France. So what happened there? Now, I just want to also say, so this is really interesting. We haven't talked about it. So after Yelp, you then go and you work with Airbnb and you work with Uber. So you've got a nice kind of, you know, disruptive platform education and experience working with reviews, experiences, and services, right? So I want to know, A, what did those combined experiences working for pretty much American West Coast startups, what did that teach you about what you wanted and did not want professionally?
I think what I really like with both three companies, it's everything, the service that they were proposing. They needed me and also the team around to build it from scratch. Yelp, it was to build from scratch in Bordeaux. But then it was the same with Uber. They were just launching Uber Eats and it was helping local businesses. And it's the same for Airbnb. They were just launching Airbnb experience. It was again to connect like local experiences, local businesses, local people. So I think I already have these things with them, everything local, everything authentic. And this is what I wanted, definitely. But then when I traveled to Japan, I realized also that there's maybe something I can, you know, build for myself and for the others by working hard for my own company and not for other companies. So I wanted to give it a try also. And I also realized that if I have one day to build a company, the team would be important because this was something we had at Yelp. Like this was one of the successful stories, is being able to have this great team. This was like an internal community within the company too, and it was really helpful. The French team is now all know my friends. So it's really great that we could be that. And I knew also that I didn't want a toxic work environment. I wanted work-life balance with a bit of remote and flex time opportunities. So all these experiences were building the future manager that I am now.
Right. You're learning what you want to do and what you don't want to do as a leader.
Yeah. And I definitely wanted my team to feel comfortable enough to try new things and to be comfortable enough also to be transparent and to, even if it's making a mistake or anything, it's something I repeat a lot to my team actually. And it's don't be afraid, like try new things, come see me, ask for initiatives and they'll always be welcome. And if you are making mistakes, that's not really mistakes. If you are learning from them, if you have some learnings from them, then if you learn from your mistake, then the learning is not a mistake. So at the end, it's not a mistake. Go for it.
Right. Okay. So encouraging your team to take risks and learn from their mistakes. It sounds like it's kind of the cornerstone to the way that you lead. What happened then? So now you're kind of grappling, it sounds, with this decision to go fully into building your company. What happens when you're in France and you are like, okay, maybe I could have the best of both worlds, build the company here, operate it from here. What happened?
Actually, I built the prototype of what would become Dococha. So the platform was supposed to be first an app to be able to discover local places, authentic places, and also to understand the story, because I have really something with that, you know, telling the story of the people. So I really wanted, even more in Japan, where you have like a third, fourth generation of tea producers, tea businesses, there are many stories to tell. And I could also make the link with wine tourism in Bordeaux. So wine tourism 40, 50 years ago, I'm pretty sure it was the same state as Japanese tea places now. But now there's a whole, you know, activities and opportunities around wine tourism. People coming to France and say, okay, I want to go to the vineyards. I want to visit this chateau and I want to try this wine, this experience. So I wanted to do the same with tea tourism in Japan. And for me on paper, it was like the best idea. So I decided to pitch it and to meet as many banks and many startup committees as I could. And actually I met all the bank in Bordeaux that I could. And I got rejected by all the bank. Like they were not believing in the project. They say it was too risky. And I was like, it's the definition of building a company. That's risky. Like it's a bet that you have to take on someone or on a project. But at that time I was like, okay, so the bank, it's no. So what should I do? Then I go to the startup committee and I will always remember that interview that I got. It was one of the last interview before knowing if I could get like a woman loan for a woman founder. And I got a call actually from a man. And I'm laughing in advance because I know what I'm about to say. And it's true that when he talked to me, and first he told me that, why are you focusing first on Apple and Android phones? And I should think about more, I think it was Microsoft phone at that time. And I was pretty sure at that time that it was not a thing anymore. So I didn't want to, you know, to ruin the interview from start. So I said, oh, yeah, why not? Like I could add it in my business plan. And then he continued with my background saying that I was not credible, being from a marketing background, and if I want to succeed, I should find a male tech co-founder, so otherwise no one would believe in me. And I was not aligned with that. And I was thinking, this is not how I am envisioning entrepreneurship. Like, I was not against having a co-founder or anything. It's just that it has to happen naturally. Like, you cannot force people to meet or things to happen. So then I was rejected by this startup committee, and it was in March 2019. I would remember it because when I received this phone call, it was very hard because I was thinking, what should I do? Should I continue to believe that it's a good project? Should I go back to what I used to know, like having a comfortable salary and just boom, moving back to the path I was envisioning first? So I let the night pass, and the day after, I realized that, okay, if France doesn't want me, so what country or who could want this project? And I thought, oh gosh, Japanese tea, it's in Japan. So maybe I could find something in Japan that could make sense for me there. So this is also the second haha moment of my entrepreneurship journey, is I was so convinced that there was something to do with Japanese tea and this platform that I was building, that I decided to take, let's say, not all the risk, but to try everything I can. So I tried to find connection between France and Japan. And I think it's a question of chance and timing. Sometimes I found on internet the mobile phone number of a representative of a partnership between France and Japan, business partnership. So it was specialized. So I called right away. I left the message and I didn't have news for more than 10 days. So in my mind, it was like, okay, that's it. Bye bye, Japan. Bye bye, Japanese tea. And I got
bye.
And then he called me back, apologizing, saying, I'm sorry, I was on holiday and I just got your message. And I think you have something. You have something. And I don't want you to leave that idea, you know, like to just say, okay, that's it. Before you talk to these business people in Japan. So he connected me with the president of Bouygues Asia. And that's true that that was another aha moment when I spoke to this president.
Amazing.
So yes, after that, he also told me, Pierre Mustier, it's his name. So if he's listening to your podcast later on, he told me like,
hi, Pierre.
Hi. He told me, you have something. But why are you still in France? Your market is not France. Your market is Japan. So it was like, boom, okay, it's Japan. So I think it was the same day or the day after, I immediately booked my flight to Japan to spend 3 months there and to crash test the project.
Wow, amazing. I love that story. So you're like about, you go all the way through to have an asshole in France who tells you you have no, you know, credibility or legitimacy unless you get a man as a co-founder. Thank you. You're like, no. And even then it sounds like he rejects you. So you are about to like kind of last straw, leave a phone message for this guy who seems like he's the, you know, potentially the one. Don't hear back. Assume it's dead. He's just on vacation. Comes back and he's like, wait a second, you've got something. I'm going to introduce you to the right people. And he does. And he clarifies what was wrong in a way was that it wasn't about France.
My market.
It was about
Japan. It was the market I was targeting. Like it was not the good market. And actually it was for good that everything happened to me, like being rejected and having all the door closing in front of me, because it is what led me to Japan.
Okay. So today, what actually is your business doing and where do you see it going?
Actually, back in 2019, I thought I would be in Japan for Japanese tea because I was there for Dokocha actually. So at the end, I spent 3 months and I came back to France and then I decided to come back again to Japan at the end of the year 2019 because I got very quickly businesses like very important and famous tea businesses in Tokyo saying yes to Dokocha to be there on the platform. I also started to meet the startup community there and to start building the network, which is everything everywhere, but even more in Japan because we are startup is a small community and foreigners also, even in Tokyo. So it's true that a lot of people invested in me, but when I say invest in me, it's not only a question of money, it's a question of time, it's a question of office space also. I was welcome at Place to Be and I met also people who invest in their time into my project, into helping me to recommend me anyone. So I was really set up to launch Dokocha. But if you see the timeline, it was in December 2019. And I also applied for a startup visa because when you want to live somewhere, you need to, the right legal situation. And for me, it was a startup visa. So I got my startup visa approval in December 2019. And I decided it was time to go back to France to prepare the moving and everything. And when I came back, it was in February 2020. So when I came back to France, the timing started to really be close to the pandemic that we all knew. And all my flight canceled, my flight back to Japan when I was preparing the moving. Mm. So I succeeded to come back to Japan just 2 weeks before the state of emergency started in the country. And Japan was one of the most strict country regarding COVID measures and everything. So no more international tourists. So no more Dokocha, actually. So when I arrived in Japan, it was for Dokocha. And and at that time, when you are all set up and ready to, you know, do your business development, you have to really think about what you want to do. Like, do I want to be stubborn and continue in a way where for now I don't have my main, you know, audience target? Or is there anything else I can do that could be helpful and that is still making sense? Because it's a lot with me about what is making sense to me. I would not be able to do something just for the fact to do something. It has to make sense. It has also to resonate with some values that I have and also what I want to, you know, develop. It's a question of vision. And it's a question of alignment also. And at that time, Dococha was not resonating anymore because of all of what we've been through. And then I decided to pivot to what is my main company now. It is called Digital Menu, and it's a mobile menu company. We saw many, many QR code menu technology, many, many mobile menu. And I thought at that time that it would be useful for Japan even more, because even for Dococha, for the tea, when you find an address and you go there, how do you understand the menu? How do you understand if the food diversity is good for your diet? Right. And it was something like a tool very useful here, but a bit different because I wanted to include a story also. So I pivoted in 2 weeks. And in the summer of 2020, I launched Digital Menu. And I was also looking for fund here, to be honest with you. So I went to some banks. So I repeat the story again, and I got the same answer. And that was also something like, you know, when I say to people that I was coming to Japan, like I receive a lot of testimony that it would be hard for me being a woman in Japan and trying to build my own company harder than in other country, actually. And it's true that it is hard. It is hard to build a company, but I didn't feel it was particularly hard because I am a woman, actually. It's just because being a foreigner and building a company in a foreign country where you have to learn everything from scratch, it's hard no matter what. But it's true that I went to this very famous bank. It was for women founder loan, and I met a woman of my age, a Japanese woman, and the same happened. I asked for a specific amount of money, then I did my pitch, present my business plan, financial plan, everything, and at the end I said the amount that I needed to raise, and I got a specific answer from this woman. And she said to me, this is a great project, but you are a woman in Japan, and woman generally needs to have less ambition. And even in the amount you want to raise, you need to have less and less. So I didn't agree with that. And I decided that it was time for me to, you know, speak out. And I said to her that, thank you very much for the feedback and the time you spent with me today. But I really need to tell you something, is that I believe in my project. I believe in the team I am envisioning, and I will succeed to raise this amount of money. And at the end of the road here, 2020, 2023, I raised three times the amount I was asking first to this woman. And when I succeeded to get the lead investor, the angel investor that I am lucky, really lucky to have, I sent an email to this woman. And No, that's not the story. I think she sent me an email first after this meeting. She sent me that email that I still have, and she said thank you to me. She sent an email and she said thank you because I have your age, and it is so powerful to see someone believing in what she is building and taking risk and having this ambition. And she wanted to thank me for that. I wanted to show her that it was possible.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, that was quite a story.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, Ziva. Oh,
but you're so gracious about it too. That would have driven me. I would have been very angry, I think. And the fact that you were able to say, well, thank you. I disagree with your vision. And I thank you for your time and for your feedback, but I disagree with it.
Yes.
But I'm going to go show you that I can get more than I need, actually more than I'm asking, because I'm worth it. And my company, my vision is worth it. But that goes back to this, I don't know, this capacity that you have
to bounce back,
but to go follow through and like overperform, you know, overperform what everyone else is doing. And I think that's probably a real trait of a visionary, of someone who is inspiring for others to take note of and to find strength through. So are you talking about your story, your success story, to other entrepreneurs?
Yes. Not on a very often basis, should I say. I got this opportunity with Google for Startup last year to be at an event called Story Night, which was co-organized with a startup lady, a community of startup founder. And yeah, I was about to tell my story, but I was not used to, you know, when you build a company, then you are more used to pitch your company, your product, your service, your team. And then it was the first time, and you are the second time that I need to reflect back on the story itself of myself. Because it's true also that when you build a company and you have this tendency of always moving forward, you always want to, in my case, to take care of everything around, take care of the clients of the company, take care of my team and making sure everything is smooth. But sometimes, most of the time, the person you forget most of the time is yourself, actually. So I also want, you know, on that path of wanting to become, of wanting to develop, it's also important, and it's something that I want to remind myself often, is just to live the moment. Because I realized not that far, like few maybe weeks ago, few months ago, that I was always living in the future. Like I was always planning the next meeting, or I was always planning, you know, the next things to do. And you were speaking at the beginning of this podcast, like the whole to-do list that can be overwhelming. And that's true that I also talk about the transparency that I have with my team. So it means that even myself, I'm comfortable to say, oh, I made a mistake as a CEO. Oh, look, I made a mistake. Or, you know, lead by example. Like, okay, you want your team to have a work-life balance. You need to show them that you can get that work-life balance. It means also that I can take day off. I can enjoy having holidays. Like there was all a myth, you know, around CEO at startup and founder that you need to work the hardest you can and you don't have any rest and you don't have anything because you need to become. Sometimes I just force myself not to have plan and just live the present and to enjoy, you know, the loved ones and all the very personal moments, even more living abroad. And you know what it is like, you live abroad, so you choose to go far away from the life you used to have and most of your loved ones and to rebuild everything. But we need to also indulge ourselves in living the present even more today.
Well, I think that you know, draws on a really interesting tension between, you know, this ambition and the drive and the vision and the moving forward. But then how much of the journey are you actually enjoying and taking advantage of?
Yeah.
And here you are, you know, an expat in an incredible country. There's so much for you to experience. What is it there? You know, there's something I also think is interesting about, you know, as it's also my own experience and any other long-term expat, you know, there's something about the capacity to see the new country you're in through fresh eyes.
Yeah.
And to be able to kind of frame it and appreciate it in ways that maybe some of the locals don't, provide a different perspective. Do you feel like that's part of what is going on for you, is you're able, or that the mission is for you to help the locals appreciate who they are and what they create?
I love doing that.
Is that part of what's important for you?
Yes, definitely. It's part also of envisioning moving forward and living the present. So it's always a balance. Like you cannot be everything every time. Mm-hmm. And it's true that I love working in Japan, but I also love being an individual and allowing myself also to connect with the local and to be what I like to be as a person, like discovering new places, interacting with the local, trying to understand everything and trying to see with fresh eyes. So yeah, definitely I'm aligned with what you are saying. It can be in Fukuoka, it can be in Kyushu, it can be discovering.
That what you just said reminds me of something that I definitely feel is a common thread, is that when you're living in a foreign land, there's a part of you that is lit up because you are in this discovery mode. You're in the communication mode. You're in the like absorbing mode. And if that is a part of your identity that you like and that you want to nurture, then that is one of the best combinations you can find.
Yeah.
I think that that's something that people really love when they travel. You know, like when they travel, they're in a discovery phase. They're open, they're experimenting, they're learning. And so people love to travel for that reason.
Yes.
And as an expat, it's almost like you get to do that every day.
Yeah. And even more in a country where I don't master the language. Like every day can be challenging also.
Yeah.
And you think of Japan of being very, very technologic, but it's not. Like we see the high tech everywhere, but it's in big cities. And once you go more countryside or you go in a smaller city, that's definitely not. And they are not speaking that much English, nor speaking about French. So you have to really, if you want to connect, you have to learn the language. And now I can, have a conversation, like a full conversation with a Japanese person. So which is like
Wow, good for you.
yeah, which is a good
Good for
milestone.
you.
But
That's
yes,
amazing.
definitely. Like, for example, next week I will be in Kyoto and Osaka for business. But it's good also that when you were asking where I am at now, it's time for me also to go back to Dococha because I focused a lot of my time on digital menu for mobile menu, story of the businesses. But also with my company, I wanted it to make sense not only for me, but also for the team and for our targeted audience. And this is why we try to put some kind of sustainability here in Japan. We discover it was super hard to, just market sustainability, like, oh, do go mobile, go digital, and you will save trees. They were not interested in that. So we partner with One Tree Planted and we say, okay, for every mobile menu you created on digital menu, we plant one tree where the planet needs it the most. So it was making sense, like, okay, it's not only mobile menu, then we do sustainability, and then we do a support local campaign where we bring some love card, love messages, thank you messages to the local businesses around us. So it's all about, again, moving forward, building a company, but a company that makes sense and are not only selling product, but also like having values for the local country I am here, for the locals here. And again, you see, local people, local businesses, local experiences make sense with where I come from.
Definitely, definitely. It all aligns. It all aligns. Based on our conversation just now, what are some of the things that are standing out to you? Maybe some themes that are helping you understand the person that you're becoming more of.
I don't know how to explain it, but I think I am becoming a more confident version of myself, like a more aware of who I am, what is my worth. So I think it comes with age, also with the maturity. I can't say that, I'm becoming the person I always thought I would be because I never envisioned being in Japan. But I'm becoming a version of myself that I really enjoy being with, even if it was not planned in advance.
Yeah.
It's just that all in a sudden you realize that, oh, everything that I thought about in the past or when I was, in my teenagehood or my 20s is not even happening at all. But it's still okay. I like what I am becoming. And I don't have that clear vision to describe who I am. I think it's a ongoing process. All your life, you will have, like this kind of what I am becoming. And I think I just become myself, like truly myself. Like I can feel that I am just myself and it feel good.
Wow, what a way to close down the house. That's so
It wasn't.
beautiful. I love this idea of you realizing that the manifestation, the visualization of what you imagined you would be is not who you are, but it's different in a better way. And what I take from that is also that you enjoy being who you are. And spending time with the person
Yes.
you are.
No, that's true. And I just got that new aha moment, Ziva, thanks to you. Like asking this question that I don't often ask myself the question, who I am becoming or who I want to become, because I'm in the fast paced environment right now. So it's like I don't have time to think about it. Like I don't take the time to think about it. And just you asking this question made me realize that, wow, okay, actually on becoming is not about becoming a specific profession or, becoming a specific, I don't know why. It's just for me actually, yes, being me.
Well, thank you so much, Cyrielle, for joining me today.
Thank you, Ziva.
It was an absolute treat.
Thank you, Ziva. That was so nice to be here.
I am so appreciative of having your time and your attention and would love to hear anything you have to say, any feedback, any questions, any requests. You can leave me a voice message if you go to speakpipe.com/onbecoming. That's speakpipe, speakpipe.com/onbecoming. I promise to get back to you. If this podcast has touched you, inspired you, transformed you in any way, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast listening platform.